most women in radio sadly have stalkers, and it's very frightening. I've heard people talk about my voice. It's my tool. A woman would be far better off on her own than ever having sex with a man like you.
Conversations, an occasional radio moment series in which you hear from those who've made a difference. Diana Luke.
I grew up in Canada. It was a tiny village called Sutton West. My dad was the local pharmacist. It was spread out. There were lots of farmers. But I think the main thing is it was a place where a lot of the city folk, as we called them, would come for the summer. I was one of five kids. I was the second eldest. I was a tomboy, very much a tomboy, loved playing outside. I did experience some bullying when I was at school, and I found that my greatest delight was spending time fishing. I think I was quite a loner because we had a ranch-style house, as most people would have in the villages. I used to climb up on the roof and get away from everyone up there as well. I was sandwiched between two very intelligent siblings. My parents saw me as the fun one, the rebel, the black sheep. I enjoyed having fun. I enjoyed doing the extracurricular activities like music, like sport, and so forth. When it came to the studies, I got on with it. My dad was very, very keen on, in the morning before exams, he would get up very, very early and quiz us. And you would read every page. You would know, memorize every page to make sure that you got it right, because he was quite a strong character.
Ontario's Radio 1, CHUM 1050 Toronto, on the go, go!
Radio was very important because, you know, we had, I think it was Chum FM, which was the main one. I used to have battles with my dad because my dad was a jazz trombonist, because I loved the new music. We loved it. And he did like, he liked the Beatles and so forth. But I went a little bit further in that I loved Janis Joplin. I loved John Mayall and Eric Clapton, and just extraordinary sounds that just woke me up out of this little village where it felt people were quite samey. And it was wonderful to have that opportunity to hear someone like a female like Janis Joplin really belt it out and let those feelings out. And it was brilliant. So yeah, music was really important to me. We'd gone to our own kind of Woodstock in Canada, me and some friends. And I had this fabulous bag. I wish I still had it, and I have no idea where it went. This huge brown leather saddle bag, which must have been 2 foot across. Suede it was, suede leather. And long suede fringes all the way down to my feet. Now, I'm tall, and the plaited strap on the arm was just absolutely gorgeous. But I did something really interesting that I never really connected until recently. I used to go to festivals and I would put a microphone in my bag, but it wasn't attached to anything. It didn't have a tape recorder or anything. It was just a microphone, and I would go around and interview people. I mean, I don't know what that was about. But everyone opened up to me. And it was like, oh, I'm really enjoying this. And I was just going around like I was a reporter or something. And how's it going here? You're having a good time and all the rest. And then we'd hand out some flowers because that's what we used to do back then. Maybe that was the start. I left school and I went into nursing. They asked me to represent my school of nursing. So, I used to sing. And I had an auto harp, I still do, which is like a zither. And I used to write my own songs. So I've always had an interest in music, but it was just sort of getting my feelings out. So I thought I'd write a song about hope. It was for this cancer organization. So all these other nurses from other colleges went in and just talked about, you know, what they were, what their mission was in life. And I got up on stage and was strumming away on my auto harp and sang this song. Didn't win, didn't expect to, but then they invited me back afterwards for this big conference and had to perform again. So that was fun. So that was nursing, but nursing wasn't for me. Nursing, I was dreadful at. To give someone an injection, and we'd practice a lot on ourselves and on oranges, but mainly on ourselves, which is pretty brutal. But the first time I gave someone an injection, I rubbed it better. Well, you can't, because immediately you've infected it again. So it was like, I just wanted to make it better. And when I was in nursing, there was a situation where me and another student went into a woman who was about to give birth. I think it was her fifth child. She really knew that she was going to give birth, and nobody was in the room. And we didn't know what to do because we were very, very fresh. And this baby just came out like nobody's business, had to catch this little thing. And then everyone started running in. So, yeah, that was exciting. But nursing wasn't for me. I realized that what I wanted to do was ask people questions. How are you? Rather than their physical, because I felt that was the part that made more sense to me than trying to patch something up. I wanted to work on the mind. I then trained health and fitness, did very well with that. So monitoring people, fitness instructor, all that kind of stuff, top of the class, enjoyed it. And then after that, I mean, I have been engaged many, many, many times. I think 8 times, yes. And anyhow, I ended up meeting someone who was British, who'd come over, who was a doctor, and he was in my village. We met and we married, I think 6 weeks after we met in London. Being silly, we decided to make out in the wedding pictures. I was pregnant and stuff, which I wasn't. There wasn't time for that. We did manage to stay together for 7 years and have 3 children, which was amazing. So that brought me over to the UK. It was a culture shock. A jumper in Canada was a dress. My size 9.5 shoes, I would go into shops and they'd look at me aghast and say they didn't have any because it was 7.5 in this country. You know, just words. And then when I came to live in Sheffield, I was like learning a whole new language. I remember meeting someone on the east side of Sheffield on a double-decker bus, which was very exciting because we didn't have those. And we had to have an interpreter because he didn't know what I was saying and I didn't know what he was saying. And I remember watching Kez when it first came out. Brilliant film. And there's a scene at the beginning, I can't remember, where I think they're in the bedroom, but you couldn't see their mouths or anything. And when it was filmed in North America, they gave it subtitles because you couldn't work out. It was a Barnsley accent, you know.
Switch light out then.
Switch it out yourself.
And that's what I loved about coming over here, that I came from a country which is second biggest in the world, and yet there was this homogenized accent. And it was like, but I can come to Sheffield and I can be here. And then 3 minutes down the road, there's a new accent and then another one down there. And it was just brilliant. I loved it. I loved the eccentricity and the kind of quirkiness of it all rather than have a nice day now. You know, I just didn't want that samey kind of experience. I enjoyed the slightly different way of looking at things. I initially started off with my health and fitness. I became an associate lecturer in health education within adult education and used to run groups for women in stress, for whole food cookery, which was a big thing back in the 70s and so forth. And they were sellout programs. We got picked up by the Wellbeing series on Channel 4, and we were filmed for that, and that was quite exciting. And the reason I got into radio was I went to Hallam, which is our local station, to talk about some of my courses that I was running in the autumn, and a guy said, could you come on our show on a Sunday evening? It's a round-the-table discussion. This author is coming in to talk about his book, and we'll give you the book, and you can have a look at it. And it was written by this man, and he was such an egocentric man. He came in and he was just preening himself, and he had this woman with him, which I think was called as publishing editor or something, and she had these long nails and this tight little leopard skin dress, and she was massaging his shoulders like, oh Lord. And I'd read the book and I just thought, wow. And I was really going through quite a strong feminist time, as many of us were in the 70s. And there were about five of us around the table. One of them was someone from the Samaritans. There was a doctor, and they basically just said, speak your mind, just don't make any noise on the table or anything like that. And I think what I said was something like, because he said, a woman's orgasm is a culturally learned experience like playing the piano. And I just thought, you idiot. So I said something to the effect of, a woman would be far better off on her own than ever having sex with a man like you. And then they went for a commercial break. Because it was a Sunday evening. And this friend of mine, doctor's receptionist, she said she was listening, and she literally was driving and veered off the road when I said that, because it was quite a big thing back then. And then from that point, there was quite a bit of controversy, and that came up as one of their highlights at the end of the year and all this kind of... This guy asked me out afterwards. I kid you not. And I just looked at him. I thought, oh, typical. He honestly asked me out afterwards, and I just laughed. Really? Seriously? You can't hear me? Maybe he thought he could swing me around. I don't know. Whatever. Yeah, that's how it started. And then the guy who'd asked me to join the round the table discussion then was running Viking in Hull, and I was the first female presenter there. Well, it's that weird thing of sitting in a studio talking to yourself. I mean, that's basically what you're doing. You're just talking out loud. And it was like, I have got to get my head around this, because I'm quite... And they're listening to me in the other room, and I'm not used to that. So it took quite a bit of nerve, and then a show came up. And of course, we had records back then. So trying to put... And there was no producers or anything like that. You were in there on your own. You know, it was like... No security guards, no nothing. You went in, you locked up, you turned on the alarm. And yeah, I was scared. Viking on the road. They tell you if you did something wrong, you know, radio's good like that. Not so much of the positive stuff, more of the negative, which is, I think, the wrong way to teach people. And I remember quite clear, I don't remember what the first record was, no idea, but I do remember my hand shaking so much as I'm trying to put the stylus down. And I was honest. I just said, look, I'm new to this. There's a whole variety of numbers, you know, that you can call on. I don't even know how to pick the phones up yet. But if you are listening, can you call me and just let me know that you're listening? And every night they would all just light up, and I go, thank you. And we kind of took it from there. You'd walk in, there'd be reception, go through the doors into, there were two studios. We did have some times in those studios. It was just hilarious. I was doing double shifts once, as you do, because, you know, you needed the money. I don't know where people get this idea. You make lots of money in radio. It's not my experience. And I was bored. And I was swiveling round. I did have a kind of producer who was this lovely young lad that used to come in with me. And I was swiveling round, and I took my headphone socket out. And then I'm back on again. I'm thinking, where is it? So I'm pushing underneath the desk, and I pushed the alarm, silent alarm. So then the cops are outside. I'm like, oh, God, what have I done? So we've done all sorts of crazy things. Yeah, it was a very small place. Used to do the late night show, had a stalker. I think most women in radio sadly have stalkers, and it's very frightening when you're on your own and you're coming out of a building and someone leaves a note on your car. You know, I did have that on a few different stations. I think doing late night radio as a woman draws certain people out. I don't know, but one person actually was put in prison for what he was threatening. So yes, it's an interesting area to work in as a woman, particularly late nights. I came up for some awards. I was in the top eight of some awards thing. but I wasn't there that long, I don't think. We had a captive audience with the prison, which was good in that we had an opportunity to... I started the Luca Love back then, which was prisoners and their wives, predominantly they were men, were able to connect through the radio. They would come in afterwards when they'd come out of prison and they come on the show, give me beautiful little presents, handmade things. And one couple has stayed in touch with me over the 25, 30 years, and he came up and he said, saved his marriage. So all these years they've stayed together and they feel that that it saved their marriage. And then you get lovely letters from people out of the blue. The program Benidorm, Darren Litton, and he got in touch with me and he said, I used to listen to you when you were doing Viking. You were helping people who were coming to terms with their sexuality, and I was only in my teens then. And he said, I just want to say thank you. Because I, you know, you don't know who you're touching. You don't know who you're talking to. And I think the most important thing I learned about radio that I would say for anyone else getting into it is think of just one person that really needs to hear what you have to say. Because over the years, the number of people have said, it made such a difference what you said that day. And this could be someone who had cancer. This could be someone who had just lost their partner or whatever. And you just think of one person that could be listening and talk to that one person. And it makes all of the difference. I think that I was surprised just how much ego... Oh, I'm sorry, I have to laugh. I remember going into a station. I don't really want to say which station because it will reveal who the person is. But it was in the early days. And this man, because predominantly they're men, was just chatting to me. And then, and he went, I'm just going on. And now, and I was like, oh my God, who's this? And the voice completely changed. It was like you have this different persona, which I've never done. I've never quite understood. When I was working at Pennine Radio, I got a phone call from the authorities. I can't remember who they were back then. And I thought, oh, God, what have I done? What have I done? You know, it's one of those horrible moments. You ring them up and they say, is this Diana Luke? Yes. Have you got a photo of yourself? And when people used to ask for a photo, I'd say, what would you like me to look like? Because that's what it is. Some people thought I was black. Some people thought I was some blonde, whatever, you know. And it's just like, tell me what you'd like. Debbie Harry? Would you like a picture of Debbie Harry? Whatever. Because it's just your imagination. That's all it is. But it was very funny. It was challenging. There were times that there were some major issues, one in particular, where I was transferred because I took someone up for sexual harassment. Back then, there were some women who did sleep their way to the top, and I was never going to be one of them. It was a boys' world, and I was told that this particular person was a golden boy. So therefore, what my interpretation of the situation was irrelevant. And this person has apologized to me since, but it was quite a wake-up call that there really was a lot of sexism. I did a lot of miles at the beginning of my radio career because I was doing Hull for Viking and Hallam for Sheffield and Pennine for Bradford. I think they were the main ones initially. We had the Yorkshire Radio Network, and then I went down south to do the Superstation, which was, I think, 34 stations. And once again, it was a late night show, traveling in the middle of the night and all the rest of it. Certainly near the red light area, it was really rough coming out at night. Oh, God. I honestly thought it would be a good idea to have like a mannequin sat next to me, because when I was coming out at night, people would be grabbing your car and stuff, you know, because they were off their heads. And believe it or not, my producer was Chris Evans. And I'm sure Chris would agree, we were not the best of buddies. He wanted to sensationalize things, which is how, you know, radio works for many people. And these were letters that people had sent in, and I couldn't do that. I just couldn't do it. It wasn't part of who I am. And I didn't want to take advantage of people. There was a little bit of that kind of shock jock kind of stuff going on. And it was never who I was, and I couldn't put it across. So we had a falling out one night, and he just kind of threw the late papers up in the air and walked out. And he was quite the character. He knew what he wanted, and... Yeah, I mean, we spoke when I was working at GLR. I had to interview him for an award thing, and I thought, oh no, what am I going to do? Because there was even a point when he was doing the breakfast show that they had asked me to come in to see about co-hosting with him. I thought, that's never going to happen, and it didn't. But when I met him at the awards, we talked and we were fine. So it was. I think he's mellowed with age. Let's put it that way.
Rudy White. Oh my God! I'm so. Oh, sorry, that just went right through my pelvis.
Sorry.
Is that my theme song?
I don't know.
Is that my theme song? Sorry, that's how people know who I am? That's it.
Ruby Wax.
I'm so embarrassed.
Ruby Wax and Johnny Walker and Phil Kennedy, Johnny Moran for a while, and Whispering Bob. Yeah, I was the newbie. And it was like, woo, all these incredible, well-known people. And then myself. And it was like, wow, this is quite a buzz. Phil was a good friend of mine, Phil Kennedy, probably because we had similar time slots. Johnny was hilarious because his tech op would take over and he'd go off to the bar. So he'd just be segueing tracks together. And then the boss would be going into the bar with some of the radio people, and Johnny would be in there, and they're like, "What? Well, I thought you were on air," kind of thing.
I'm just taking the broadcasting breathalyzer and failed. Get another TJ immediately. Well, hello, good evening. It's Johnny Walker back in the night. Hey, listen, this is history in the making going on here. Are you aware of this? Have all the anoraks got plenty of blank tape? Are we rolling here? Testing one.
It was a different world, and it was quite an eye opener, coming from, you know, small radio stations up north to suddenly being in London, which was it was quite an experience. It was a job. I think that was the main thing. It was a job, taking it to more places than had done before, being able to be heard in Northern Ireland as well as Scotland. It was quite an experience to think that you could have this, because people used to write in back then, and you would be getting letters from all over the country and experiences. I came up with a phrase which people still quote at me when they get in touch with me. Good morning, moon bathers and bed warmers. That was my phrase, because I just thought, you know, some people are out there working and some people are in bed, because it was once again a late night show.
Diana Moon.
Good morning, my darlings. Have you been doing some serious moon bathing? Because if you looked at that moon, it is beautiful. I want to hear about it a little bit later on.
I was doing double shifts. I was a single parent, had to earn the money. So I was getting 3 hours sleep a night because I was doing the mid-morning show the next morning. And a particular presenter was following me who would never show up on time. And I would have to continue working throughout the night, even longer. They kept telling me I had to ring this person up to tell him to come. I'm like, I'm doing a show. But this person was considered to be quite influential. And I reached a point, probably on no sleep. I'd lost a huge amount of weight. And I just said, right, tech ops, this is your moment. Because once again, he had not shown up. And I just told them, this is your big moment. You're going to be taking over. And I did. That's exactly what I did. I got fired, which, you know, that was the way it had to be. But I just, no one was listening to me. I just couldn't continue.
Beaming live from the Starship Voyager, 23,000 miles above the planet Earth. This is the Superstation.
You know, I've heard people talk about my voice. You know, they say all sorts of nice things about it. And, you know, they say that some people say it heals them, they feel better for it, and all the rest of it. You know, I used to warn truck drivers with the late shows, make your window open, make sure it's open. You know, I don't want you falling asleep on me. It's my tool. Have I done anything with it? No. I mean, it is who I am. Speaking to you now is no different than if I was to go on radio. I don't quite understand how people suddenly take on this different persona and still be authentic. It doesn't make sense to me. I did a show that I'm very proud of in Ireland, Southern Ireland, and won an award for it. I think my accent is easier in Southern Ireland than it is for a British person to work there. Because when I have a drink, and I do enjoy a drink, very often people will say, what part of Ireland are you from? So yeah, speaking of the Irish show, that was, I think, the most important show I've ever done. It was Kieran McGeary, when I used to work for him down south, said, when I get a show in Ireland, I would like you to work for me. And to his word, he got 102, 103 beat and asked if I could do an Agony Aunt show from my own studio in Sheffield and, you know, work with the producers over there. We went for the award ceremony for the PPI Awards and I won Best Audience Interaction.
Heartbeat with Diana Luke.
They can't have one arm and one leg and the other one have the other arm and the other leg. They've got to be confident enough in their relationship with you to realize that you have got other friends, you have other interests and activities. And it doesn't mean that your best friend is more important than your boyfriend or your boyfriend
that
is
was,
more
that was that was one of the hardest shows I've ever done. Not because of the distance, but because of what was happening. I learned that Ireland has the highest rate of male teenage suicide in Western Europe. And the kids that were coming on, it was for teens, the kids that were coming on for help, the producers who were lovely lads, and I met them obviously at the awards, we all would have to have a break for a song to pull ourselves back together again. I used to sob at the end of that show because it was so raw. It was so vulnerable. These people. and then they canned it. I think people in management that take you off the air immediately have no understanding of radio and the power that it has on people's lives. And unfortunately, I think a lot of people in management don't have communication skills. It's pretty evident in some of their behaviors. And when that does happen, there is violation. There has been a rapport, and to suddenly be taken off air, many of them feel they've lost their lifeline. There was no one else to talk to. There was no one else that would listen to them. And to suddenly cut that off was horrible. I've only a couple of times I had that. But why? Do you think I'm going to say something that is going to be so wrong? Or don't you know me well enough just to say, we're moving on now, I wish you well, or whatever? But no, sometimes you will have bosses just say, no, we've decided that we need to move on to something else or whatever, and you're off tonight. And it's like, wow, I think that's a violation of the human connection that radio has a fabulous power and influence.
County Sound provides two great radio stations for Surrey and Hampshire. Premier FM on 96.4 plays the latest hits, the greatest memories. And you can hear the UK's original Gold AM playing the greatest hits of all time at 1476 on your radio dial. Wake up to a great County Sound radio station tomorrow.
County Sound, I used to do the mid-morning show, which is when I was doing the Superstation. And then I did the lunchtime show with Simon Cummings, and we had the best time. We would go out with the radio car and we would take people out to lunch and give them experiences around Surrey. It was like, oh my God, I'm getting paid for this. I remember once we were jet skiing, putting on the old rubber suit, and oh, you know, I was just having a bit of fun saying to the boss, oh, you know, it's amazing wearing this. It's like you're wearing nothing, and, you know, lunchtime, quite fun. And just chatting with people over lovely meals in different restaurants, it was fabulous. Loved it.
I never cared much for moonlit skies. I never winked back at fireflies.
My dad was a pharmacist, but his love was jazz. And he played a lot of Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan and Count Basie and Duke Ellington. And I loved it, absolutely loved it. And he played trombone, so we used to go to a lot of the bands and stuff over the years.
You're listening to test transmissions from Jazz FM. These transmissions are in preparation for the new independent local radio service for the Greater London area, which will be provided by Jazz FM as the IBA's contractor.
I think my radio career really has just been being at the right place at the right time, every time. But I was approached, went along, somehow managed to get the breakfast show, started the station.
And a very good morning to you. I'm Diana Luke, and for the very first time, this is Jazz FM.
No sleep the night before, and just everybody standing around waiting, you know, that first, well, the last minute before the top of the hour, and then playing that first record, Joey Williams, and just suddenly go, oh, breathing, first time you breathe. So yeah, it was a busy, busy time.
It's early in the morning and I can't get right. I had a little date with my baby last night.
There was a lot of upstairs champagne going on, and there was a big grand piano, and yeah, it was a very exciting time. And I think fantastic being able to see Ella Fitzgerald perform and actually be on the same stage as her. Whoa.
102.2.
It's really a pleasure to have you here, Ms.
Thank
Fitzgerald.
Thank you. And it's a pleasure being here. This is like a second home.
Well, you're going to do our grand opening, officially open Jazz FM today, and we're all excited about it. It's our first day of broadcast, and I don't think we could have had anyone better to come in and officially open
Thank
Jazz
you.
FM.
Now, Ella came over with the Count Basie Orchestra, invited by Jazz FM. Paul Jones and myself were going up on the stage before Ella came out, and I think it was Frank Foster was with the Count Basie Orchestra, and Duffy Jackson. Now, Duffy is a character. His dad, Chubby, was also big in the jazz field. And I was backstage just chatting with him, because that's, you know, I was just really happy. And as I was going out, they called us out. I'm like, oh, God, right, we're going out. And I thought, I had high heels on and this big sparkly dress, big shoulder pads. And I thought, well, my foot's dragging a bit. And the electrical tape, this great big reel of electrical tape, had somehow adhered to the back of my heel. I was dragging this damn thing out on the stage. So I had to quickly whip that off and get out on stage. But yeah, that was a magical night to see Ella. You know, she'd had her coronary issues and all the rest, and she was on a high stool, and she was just moving in a groove and just fabulous, because I'd grown up listening to her music, and that was my dad's favorite artist, so it was really good to see her live. I think he was, I know he was proud of me. I was the only one that went into music. Yeah, we had an affinity. We had a great joy of listening to music together. We used to sit and have a little cigarillo and a little single malt. I introduced him to single malt because he used to drink this horrendous American whiskey. And then I introduced him to single malt. So we used to sit there and enjoy the music with a cigarillo and a single malt.
Well, it certainly is very early in the morning, and I haven't got the blues because we are a brand new start.
A fascinating year, because jazz, there are certain people in the jazz spectrum who are so ridiculously pedantic that they forget about the love of music. And I was trying on the breakfast show to encourage people, because it was only 5% of the population liked jazz, trying to encourage more people to realize they did like jazz and like soul and blues and all the other genres. So we did have some good times. But unfortunately, I was told that they were wanting the breakfast show to have the same figures as Radio 4. It was like, well, okay. And then PY, Peter Young, who sadly has passed, who was a delight to work with, he said after I left that they didn't manage to get the figures up for years. And what we had done in that first year had made a significant influence, which was nice to hear, which, of course, you don't ever hear from the bosses, but hey.
Good morning. Thank you for choosing us. This is Carrie Jones with the best music through the night.
Viva. Right. Well, that was a time and a half. It was in the old building that Jazz FM had, so I knew the building. But the concept, all women, very interesting. Women don't really work well together when they're in a group, but it was an interesting time. And they also asked if I could program the music, and I had the incredible delight of working with Angela Bond, who was just an amazing woman. Used to go back to her flat and we'd sit there once again drinking the whiskey and smoking the cigars together, sitting out in the balcony, talking about music, talking about Kenny Everett, talking about her career, talking about being a woman in radio. But it was so bizarre because some of the people that they'd chosen to be on Viva had no interest in music whatsoever. So literally, when I was doing the programming, I had to phonetically pronounce who these people were, because Lena Fiagbi was Lena Faviche on air. And I went, no, it's Lena Fiagbi. So you'd have to, you know, really, it was very bizarre. They had no interest in music whatsoever, a lot of these people. They were just women who were having conversations. And there were some very strong characters who were part of Viva who would take over your guests because they decided that they preferred to have that interview. So you'd have read the book and done all the work and come in and realize that your guest had been brought in earlier and was with somebody else. So it was quite a interesting time working with a lot of women. Yeah. Not my favorite time. I mean, I did all the music stuff and it was a lot of work programming all the music and never got paid for it because they suddenly realized that they'd overstretched their budget. So all the work that I did setting it up, I didn't get a penny for. So yes, it wasn't very well run, I could say. Yeah, that's probably enough.
Grace Alana Radio from the BBC, 9 minutes past 9 o'clock, Tuesday evening on The Bob Harris Show with perfectly...
GLR, I did meet the most amazing guests. I had the greatest opportunity to play blues in the afternoon, to ask the questions I wanted to, because my producer was so strung out on whatever drug she was on at the time that it made more sense for me just to write the questions myself. I would usually just write the introduction, and then I would just allow it to flow, because I did watch people who would ask a question and then they'd get on with their carts or whatever and had no idea what that person said. And I never wanted to be that presenter. I really wanted to hear what that person said. So, yeah, I had a fabulous time with the guests there. And I was honored to have people playing in front of me like a private session. You know, that's what it felt like. It's only a 2.5 hour show, but during that time, I was seeing all these incredible people that I'd never had the opportunity to meet on local stations or late night shows, because no one wants to come in then. But afternoons in London, they were all over the place. So I thought, how am I going to remember these people? What about if I, and I've got these big hardback BBC diaries, A4, and I thought, why don't I get them to leave a message? And it just took off. And I've got over 4,000, you know, over the years, I've still got them here. People have said, why don't you sell them? There's no way I'd ever sell them. I'm just reading them now. Jeffrey Archer here. And I put here, Jeffrey Archer the Pratt. Oh my God. And he put, well done. Many thanks, Jeffrey Archer. Well, it was quite funny because we were at Selfridges doing an outside broadcast, and he was one of the guests, along with lots of other lovely people like Brian Blessed, who says to Diana, "What a complete interview. You freed me. I feel a better person for having met you." Brian Blessed. Bless him. You can hear his voice as I'm saying it, I'm sure. But on the same breath, we have Jeffrey Archer, who was getting very impatient because he felt, you know, it was his time and all these other interviews were happening. He was just so rude. I found him quite offensive. He was kind of insulting me for being Canadian. And I was sat next to him and I started smacking him on the knee saying, "All right, Jeffrey, edit it." And I was actually getting quite angry with him. And I thought, oh, I'm so going to get into trouble for this. And it was very interesting because when we got back to the studios at GLR, the phones were off the hook. They were all ringing in. I thought they'd be complaining. And they said, "Well done." That Jeffrey Archer, well done for laying into him. So it was very bizarre. But yeah, Richard Griffiths, lovely person. James, oh, heck, I think I need glasses for this one. Someone said, "The world is what you say it is, so say thank you for my chance to speak." Interesting. I mean, different pages, different, you know, people, lots of people who have passed. The last recording of Albert Collins, the blues performer, before he passed, and he's in the book. The Kinks, really just people I really wanted to ask questions and just, yeah, great stuff. I'm getting lost in the book now. I think I was there about 4.5 years. I left of my own volition because of the politics there. There was stuff going on that really didn't resonate with me.
And you'll be able to share your experiences with Linda Plummer, Assistant Director for the British Agency for Adoption and Fostering, and Karen Walker.
Talking about radio, people very often imagine that you have a very easy life. Well, you're not working many hours, you get paid well, you know, you can talk to lots of people, you're famous or whatever that kind of connotation is. But I do remember some very tough times when I was down south and I was a single parent and I did not have a job. And it was horrendous. It was back in the time of the recession. And I was in an ex-council house, the only house I could afford down south coming from the north, which had suddenly skyrocketed up in price, mortgage-wise. I was raising my kids and I thought, what do I do? How do I just, there was not an opportunity to get back into radio at that time. And I went to St. George's Hill, where all the rich people lived. And I used to cut grass and I used to do the weeds and I was like a carry heavy sort of leaf blowers on my shoulder and all the rest of it because a friend had a business where, you know, she did a gardening service. And I thought, I have to keep my kids out of the halfway house because I rang up and said, look, I don't know what to do here. Is there any opportunity for us to, you know, what's going to happen here? And they said, it'd be a halfway house. I couldn't put my kids through that. It was a challenging time, but it was also a time that made me realize what other people go through. And I think very often, if people come into radio from a kind of, they haven't really had much experience in life, and ups and downs, you know, we're talking about the downs, which I think are really important to our moving forwards in our mental abilities. You haven't got so much to offer then. So each of those times, whether it was the millionaire fiancé that bankrupted me because I chose not to marry him, to having to cut grass for people and be treated in a very strange way as well, because suddenly you have this different persona because you're out in this rich person's garden and they see you, you're invisible. So it was all of these opportunities that have taught me how important it is to listen to other people's stories. When a person says, "I'm fine," there's more to it than that. And being able to give people pauses where there is no conversation, there's an opportunity for another person to be heard because you're not interrupting. Well, I came back up to Sheffield. I'd had some pretty dire times with a particular man down south who made my life hell financially. And I just wanted to pick up the pieces again and come back to where I felt safe. And that was Sheffield. I really wanted to come back up here. There's something quite special about a city that is basically lots of little villages. And people really do connect with each other. It's not as big and as loud and as maybe competitive as Manchester or somewhere like that, which I think is more like London. It's just an easy place to be and very close to the Peak District, which is just brilliant. And then continued with my therapy work and so forth, but radio came again and we had Peak FM, we had Real Radio and BBC Manchester then, and then trying to remember Leeds, and then the whole group of the BBC. So I was working for York and Humberside, and sort of they all came together. And when I was doing a 60s show, and I was doing a love show, The Voice, you know, the usual late night thing. So there was a lot of local radio stations that I did up here.
BBC Radio York.
Hi, I'm Diana Luke, and I do hope you can join me on Saturday night for our fab and groovy 60s show.
Oh, yeah. I set up a show called Diana Luke Loves the 60s, set up a Facebook group, and just basically got all the 60s music I could. And there was no producer or anything, so there was a lot of work during the week putting it all together. And it was just fabulous because people were engaging with it, were bringing back a lot of memories for them, lots of games with it, just laughing a lot. But the main thing was the engagement with the audience. A lot of texting. Weren't allowed to use the phones because we didn't have a producer, but they wouldn't give us a producer, so it was kind of catch-22. So we just did lots of texting. And then I would bring people together. I just thought, well, there's all these people listening who have a real affinity with this music. Let's bring them together. And I think that is important about radio, bringing people together. So I set it up. So I would travel up to, our first one was at York, BBC Radio York. The reason the first one was at that particular time, because we had a listener in Alabama and she was flying over. So we all decided to get together and meet Julie. I mean, we're talking about maybe 40 people would show up, which was brilliant.
Basically, I just wanted to see who owned that fantastic voice. She comes across as such a caring person, and I think she makes everybody feel individual.
And we'd have some food together, we'd go to the pub or whatever, and they'd all have their picture taken in the studio, and they'd chat with each other. And they are still friends. We did it at BBC Radio York, BBC Radio Humberside, and Radio Sheffield as well. It was wonderful just to have that opportunity to meet who these people were, but also for them to sustain relationships all these years later.
I really enjoy listening to Diana. She has a very personable attitude. She's knowledgeable of music. She plays something that's out of the ordinary.
The more we talk about social media, the lonelier people are becoming because it's not genuinely connecting with anyone. The media is creating a sense of them and us, and a lot of this kind of divide and rule, I believe, call it what you will. But I do feel that there's a need to recognize that we all have similar needs. You know, we all want to feel that we are connecting with someone, that we are important, that we can be heard and valued for what we're saying. So, yeah, I think that's the common parallel between my therapeutic work and radio.
Hi, I'm Diana. The reason I've done this video is for you to get to know me better. You can see me, you can hear me, and to understand that it's really important to have a good rapport with your therapist. I have heard from some...
I've always worked in the field of mental health. I work as a hypnotherapist and a psychotherapist. I've done that for over 20 years. I do corporate workshops around the UK for mindfulness and resilience and stress management. I go into particular companies for crisis intervention where people have had very traumatic situations. So I help them with that as well. Go into schools, teach kids mindfulness and stress management or whatever terminology you want to call it. People say, you know, do you miss radio? And I don't miss the politics of radio. I don't miss the way it's become very formulaic on a lot of stations, but I do miss the opportunity to have that kind of connection. But it was my own choice to leave. We lost the Saturday night show. And then when I said, you know, I don't want to do this on a Sunday night, it's not right, it's not working. And they said, we'll give you the Saturday night show again. I went, it's too late. You know, it's not working. I didn't feel that I was given the opportunity to be at my potential. So there has to be a point where you go, okay, so what's right here? And when I did leave, and it was hard because that was closing a door in, you know, 32 years.
We got a message in. I got to read this one out. This just makes me laugh. We got a message in from Rob, and he says, this is something I really must share with you about tomorrow, and this only happened to me today. I've been at work all day today, which is not a normal Saturday for me, so at lunchtime, I decided
I believe
to do a route planner for the journey.
We have to be
big meetup tomorrow.
Quite confident to do the job that we do, to be able to multitask, but also to engage. And the chances of losing a job in radio is high, certainly in my experience. And it's like you need to be vulnerable in order to connect with your audience, but you also have to grow a thick skin. In a breath, you could be off that show. And you have to pick up the pieces and start again. So you're dealing with creative people, sensitive, who also have to be tough, because it's going to end at some point, off and on, off and on. You are revealing yourself, being authentic. You are definitely vulnerable and exposed. And as a manager of that kind of person, I would love them to get some communication skills training. And I'd be very happy to teach them. The genuine concept of active listening. I think what Stephen Covey said, most people listen with the intent of responding. They don't really listen. They just want to interject. I think if managers genuinely sat down and listened to what their creative force thought would be helpful, rather than just figures and study groups, these random people that come off the street and say, no, we don't want that, or we want that. I think if they valued their team, not just by figures, but by content. Yeah, I think listening is a key component that could definitely be improved. How do I want to be remembered? Fondly would be nice. Having made a difference, a positive impact, to be remembered at all would be amazing. it's a finite world. To be remembered with a smile.
For more of this series, follow the Radio Moments Conversations podcast.